Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather round again. The camp, the radio, put some logs on the fire. Get Grandma out of the room and get her out because it's time for Dr. Drew and Bob's This Life.
This Life, and we want to thank our sponsor, Bergamet.com, and head on to Dr.com and click on the Bergamet banner for details. And also, holidays are coming up. Click on that Amazon banner, bookmark it at Dr.com, and also the Weekly Infusion podcast with me and Bruce Heischober, Dr. Spaz, and the newsletter associated with that, too, written by Dr. Bruce and Michelle Poe. Every Wednesday, new episodes, and do check it out, all at Dr.com, please, and we appreciate your support. Now, Bob, we'll introduce our very special guest.
Well, it's the great Jack Osborne.
Jack Osborne.
Everywhere you go.
Like, I don't know about that.
He has a new History Channel series, which I
love it. I watch
do
it all the time.
I do.
It's on like three episodes in a row when
I know,
it's on.
Only one. Just
I just watch the reruns.
It.
I watch the reruns
because History Channel has been looking for a reality show and they found it with you and your dad.
It's awesome.
Yep.
It's called
really
Ozzy
awesome.
And Jack's World Detour. It's a History Channel reality series. It's on a lot, and you can just
and
set
it's like
your DVR.
You're teaching your dad about stuff he doesn't know, but he knows a lot of
he
shit
does.
About a lot of shit.
He does.
I think it shocks people, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, I think it comes down
the tank thing was amazing.
He was
he
like,
knows everything
and
about
I had
tanks.
No idea.
Everything.
I had no idea. I thought it was going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, but we go up there, and he's like, oh, that's this tank, and didn't they have this
well,
and
he
that tank?
He was in the aftermath of World War II.
Yeah.
I mean, he has just,
well, so the actual tanks were coming over.
Well, they, you know,
I guess it's a little more real than.
They were still on the. They were like washed up on the beach.
Well, but if you're a kid in England and there's you know there's still bombed out buildings everywhere and you've heard of Panzer, you know, tanks.
Yeah, he knew all the names of them.
You know,
yeah.
I imagine you're a kid. You're like, oh, you're all over it.
Totally.
Well, okay, and you, but Drew, you just signaled all over Google on your
yeah,
phone.
Yeah, I know. Well, all over book.
Right. Yeah, book. Cave painting.
So, but it's fun. I love it.
Thank
I
you.
Love it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Has it changed your relationship with him?
It absolutely has.
That's what I thought I was seeing.
And it's in a really kind of interesting way because a couple things. One, I started realizing how OCD he is, which I never really realized.
Ritualistic.
Oh, ritualistic to the hilt.
But you were giving him shit about it, too.
Oh, big time. All the time. And I'm like, oh, like it's been 30 minutes. Like, oh, you're going to have to go do, like, you know, drink your gallon of coffee. Or, oh, look, you know.
But in that movie you made about him, he's very ritualistic.
He is.
Like,
yeah.
Before he plays. I mean, a lot
yeah,
of that
musicians,
generation rockers, they're very ritualistic
but
about
musicians,
what they do.
Musicians often have rituals and OCDs.
That generation,
but any music, you go all the way back to, you know, Baroque, I'm sure there's a lot of, because it's like being a professional baseball player or something. So
I think it
yeah.
always,
and,
but it started to happen to my generation musicians, and we all just made fun of it, because you're being a little uppity, aren't you? That's where
right?
the joke about the brown M&Ms come from.
Oh,
you know,
interesting.
David Lee Roth made this joke, like, I don't like brown M&Ms, and it became a joke, and then it became a thing, and then actually there was runners taking brown M&Ms
yeah.
out of things, and he says the first time he saw it, he was like, I was just joking.
But, you know, a lot of it to that, though, I think, like, with the rock star mentality, they say something, and they just see how people react, and then they just go with it. They're like,
yeah,
oh, wait, I can get away with this?
Yeah. Yeah, I need to be alone.
I saw your mom talking about, to that point, talking about, this is totally unrelated to what we're talking about, but it just occurred to me, talking about the behavior of Led Zeppelin
mm-hmm.
as it pertains to pushing the envelope.
Is that where you get all your prejudice against Led Zeppelin from Sharon?
Well, she described some stuff, and I was like,
well, she
oh,
hates him,
God.
Doesn't she?
No, they all. She used to manage John Bonham for a
oh,
little
really?
Bit. Yeah, and
oh,
John
okay.
Bonham's son.
I always
son
thought there was big competition.
There were. It was funny. Led Zeppelin and Sabbath, they had like rivalry in America. Like, but in England, they were all really good friends. So
oh,
when they came here
that.
And toured in America.
Oh, it made it look like war.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
She didn't describe this, but I went on. Because she actually was kind of kind to them. She goes,
I
they
think
were
it's
bad
exaggerated.
Boys.
It's exaggerated by Richard Cole. He's a friend of mine. The guys in the band weren't even there when that thing happened.
What thing?
The shark thing.
I didn't even know what you're talking about. But what I heard.
I know that story.
What I heard is that they would tie women up, burn cigarettes on them, and abuse them sexually.
Well, there was a shark thing involved.
As long as they would tolerate. And they actually talked about it and how crazy American women were for allowing this, right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and somehow that was these British guys.
But I know
would
the girls they were having sex with, Lori Maddox, Pamela DeBars. They don't say anything like that was happening.
Yeah, those.
So
but
there's
listen,
some weird mythology that goes on.
But those
in
guys,
rock and roll.
But listen, those guys became their girlfriends eventually, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's different than what they were coming and doing originally. And I, what strikes me, I can't even blame them, is that we are, you know, in this country declared that as some sort of declaration of our autonomy and independence that we can go do this and have ourselves get abused. You know what I mean? So it was a very
You mean
backwards,
last Tuesday or what?
I'm just saying it was a very backwards thing.
For the next 4 years?
It's a different kind of abuse.
Yeah. No, but
anyways, but so describe the show as people that don't know it.
So it's a kind of, it's a travel history show. So yeah. Me and my dad, we travel around the world. I mean, we did like 3 international destinations, mainly America. And we go to historical sites.
So wait, you're in the car a lot. You're driving
yeah, it's
a lot.
A,
yeah.
It's a lot of a road yeah. trip. And that comes
and Burger King.
Yeah, no, Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A. You seen that one? See, I watch these shows, Drew. These are my shows, not the Judd Apatow shows. They're not my shows.
I was literally in Savannah, Georgia, of all places. And I was looking for something. I'm like, what is this? What is it? I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. I like watched like 3 episodes.
He had never been to a fast food or what was
no,
the deal?
No, it was that like he'd never had Chick-fil-A and we kept and we were like driving in this area and we kept passing one. I was like, come on, we gotta go. And he's like, No. And I was like, you'll like it, trust me. And we pull up.
But you were in the parking lot of a mall. Like.
It was a Home Depot parking lot. We were eating Chick-fil-A in the middle of where were we? Like near like Williamsburg, Virginia.
Oh no.
And all of a sudden, one of his songs comes on the radio. And it was just like a really weird moment. And I looked in like the rearview mirror and the camera guy, and he just looked at me like, this is just too weird.
Buy the ticket, take the ride.
Right?
Did he like it?
He did. What, Chick-fil-A or the
show? No, the show. Because some of the ones I saw, he seemed like a resistant partner.
So here's the interesting thing. We had to film that show in between his tour schedule. So he would tour for 6 weeks. He'd have like 3 or 4 weeks off, and we'd try and cram in a couple episodes.
Yeah.
So he was really tired a lot of the time. And my dad, you know, he's a rock star. He doesn't like working before 11. And when he does normally work and perform on stage, it's like his work day from the time he arrives at a venue to go home is like 4.5 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So like the fact that he was on his feet for like 10, 11 hours a day and, you know, he's pushing 70, he would just
doing
get tired.
Doing stuff you don't want to do. Right?
Yeah, and he would just be like, ugh. But then like he would have these moments.
He'd light
where,
up, yeah.
Yeah, where he'd just be like, oh, this is really cool. And then he'd be like.
What was, from his perspective, what was the coolest thing?
I think he, I know he loved going to the tank museum. He just was like raved
drove
about.
Drove the tank.
Drove the tank.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Is that every English child's dream?
I'm going to go find that episode right now.
He's like flying around this like track. It was pretty amusing. I broke it. I stalled it out and it like took forever to get going. No, he really liked, he loved Japan just because he'd been so many times, but he'd never done anything. He'd just always been in a hotel room or a venue. And then I think, you know, what he always says the most is that he likes spending the time with me.
Because
we just don't get to spend that much time together, just us. And when I was younger, we didn't get to spend that much time together, just us.
Yeah.
It was always sisters and nannies and my mom. It was just so, the fact that we kind of getting to do this is just kind of awesome all in all.
How about for you? Was there...
I love the weird history stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like when we went to... this grave site of Stonewall Jackson, but it was his arm's grave because his arm got shot off. And it was like the middle of nowhere. Like that was really cool. I loved South Dakota because I don't know if you've ever been, but Rapid City, South Dakota, there's so much stuff around there because if you know, you're into history. I mean, they got the Badlands, Deadwood.
Wall Drug,
yeah, exactly. They got all these really cool stuff, like, right around this little city, and it's cool.
And they get to the hills. It's beautiful.
Oh, the Black Hills
crazy.
Are amazing.
You don't realize it.
Is that where Mount Rushmore is?
Yeah.
I've been there.
Prairie, and then, woo, these great mountains.
Yeah.
See, I was in Vans. You don't really, Musicians, they travel a lot, but they don't see much.
They essentially don't do much.
You don't do much.
You know what I mean? You always get there,
and you got to like hang out, and then you play, and then you're going to leave in the morning.
Yeah,
you know, and most you see, my days was drink. You go to a bar, but you don't see the tourist trap, yeah. the tourist thing. So then I went touring sober with Hoy, who's here. We went everywhere because you could go because I was up at 7 in the morning. Like, I'm not hungover. I don't need to find dope.
Totally.
And we would go places, like, and do fun things, go to museums. It was crazy. What's in your ear?
I'm hearing this crazy
I know.
Pitch.
It's Susan's dad coming through that thing.
Yeah.
Right?
don't even arm her with that stuff. But, you know what I mean? It's definitely.
You know that she's this big.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, wait, I think it went away.
It's gone now. It's gone. Whatever it was.
So how old's your kid?
I have two. I have a 4.5-year-old and a 17-month-old.
Oh my god!
So you're sleeping all right?
The 17-month-old just started sleeping through the night. So it's like
really no like. Yes. Well, I have a 3-month-old started sleeping 4 hours, and we were talking earlier. And now when I look at the clock and it's 3:30 and she's been sleeping since 11 at night, mm-hmm. I get up to make sure she's breathing.
Yeah.
Usually it was every 2 hours.
Have you seen the thing you can put on the foot?
No.
There's like this sock you can get.
If they stop breathing.
Yeah, no, it does. It's basically, it's one of those blood oxygen readers.
Oh, I got to get that. I got to get that.
And it starts like screaming. Like,
oh,
and, yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Why don't everyone have that? Is it expensive?
They just came out, I think, within the last year. Wow. Before,
where are they at? Medical places?
Just look on Amazon.
Amazon.
It's
oh,
literally a sock
I
you
go
put
to the
on
Dr. Drew thing.
Yeah, Dr.com. There you go. Yeah, but absolutely get that. Get a whole
yeah,
series of
really, them. Yeah.
Because
really
I do the same stuff.
You would have loved that
is
one.
Is it SIDS yeah. that you're
oh,
scared
God.
Of?
Oh, terrified.
We had 3 kids, so.
How common is SIDS?
Very.
You're kidding me.
I mean, uncannily common.
And it's.
I've never met anybody personally that's had it happen.
I've seen a lot.
But
of
them. Lamar Odom, the great basketball player, his child. I remember. I was a huge fan of the Clippers, and his child died. And I was like, oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no
and
joke.
And so we all live in this SIDS fear.
But it's exponentially higher if there's a smoker in the household. I know that.
That's true.
Oh, no smokers in my house. Hoy? Did you ever smoke?
I did, yeah. I quit probably 6 years ago.
Gum or nothing?
No, I was in a cab in New York, and you know, they have the screens, and this thing came on, and it said by like 2020, one in two people will have some form of cancer. And it just freaked me out. I was like, oh, that sucks. And I just was like, you know what? I'm not smoking anymore. I'm going to try and be that one.
Did you smoke as a young kid?
I would go on and off. And I didn't. I started when I was probably 19. No, 18.
See,
and then I
think
quit,
the later
then...
the starting, both with drugs and smoking, the easier it is to quit.
So
yeah.
It's about 0.6 per thousand. So it's, you know.
Six? Oh, 0.6. Oh, oh.
Is that one per thousand almost?
Okay.
And 3,500 in the year in the United States.
Still more people die of drugs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we live in 24-hour day fear.
Yeah, but
SIDS.
But Bob.
And is there a certain point where you don't have to worry about SIDS
six
anymore?
Months.
Six
yeah.
months.
But you understand that's only for that 6-month window that hits those 3,500. Drug addiction is getting this big population.
You want to know why I'm always in eye of Jack? I'm twice as old as him, and he knows twice as much as me.
That's
I
so
have
not
three
true.
Kids.
That is definitely
I have three
not
kids
true.
And I didn't know the 6 months is a break-off point.
Well, because I've been in it. I've been in it.
But... He also was schooled in the British system.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Well, that's real.
Do you consider
real
yourself
education.
A Los Angelian or an English person?
I think I'm pretty much a Los Angelian at this point. I
See?
Just I go back to England, and I'm just like,
yeah, but still, there's something about that secondary school education in England that's just extraordinary.
It really is.
Yeah.
It used to be, and I think they've kind of fallen back a little bit over the years. They're not as like...
Well, Brexit's pretty good example.
Right? That's a really good example.
Oh, my God. Do you have a lot
about?
Of friends that are regretting it?
Yes and no. I have a lot of friends who
I'm
are like...
I'm excited to see what happens.
I can't believe we did it, and then I have a lot of friends that are like, that are all about it. Just because of, especially friends that work in the work in a trade industry. Like my best friend, he's a tiler. He took over his dad's tiling business, and he is just like, you know, I can't compete as a business owner with a lot of the kind of Eastern European migrant population.
That's the NAFTA argument
that's coming
here.
Over.
That's the NAFTA argument here.
And he's like, I'm just.
But they have a bigger problem of the actual. We get the products. Their thing is the actual laborers come in and undercut. It's the same, sort of our immigration sort of problem here. That we say that about illegal immigrants. They say that about legal immigrants over there.
Ultimately. And they come in and they just send – the big issue is they're sending out so many pounds out of England, our currency, and they all kind of will live in one house together, like 15, 20 guys. They're all there legally because they're European Union, but they're not paying into the system, but they're taking from the system, and it's just a huge issue because they're like, well, you know, the housing and all this, there's no room for Britons who need housing. Because it's all taken up by...
It's a weird little backlash to where the many countries are going through, which is taking care of your own. That's sort of the theme of all of it. We got to take care of our own. We got enough of the rest of the world for right now. And not forever, hopefully.
Yeah.
But for right now, that's what it feels like people are saying.
And when you grow up in L.A. like you did, I'm sure that some animosity's come your way. If you have any kind of gray area discussion, that's what's happened to me and Drew, even prior to the election, if I said Hillary's a bad candidate, people attack me.
Totally.
They want to lynch me and kill me and want me to never have a podcast again. Yeah. These are friends of mine, Jack.
Yeah. Oh, I'm right there with you. But we were talking earlier about, you know, the British guy who made that whole point about stop attacking people for having an opposing view. Like, the whole thing is, like, discussion.
Were
we on the mics when you were talking about the getting the guns thing?
No.
Say that again.
So, I mean, in the last week, I got a couple phone calls from my friends who are incredibly liberal and very, like, progressive-minded. And they're like, "Hey, I need to get a gun. I need to get like a bug out bag." And they're literally
a bug out bag? You're the survivalist. What is that?
A bug out bag is like a bag you can grab and
a go bag.
Leave and like you got food, water.
If the people from Wisconsin Rust Belt invade Los Angeles,
exactly. Yeah. If all those, you know,
but toothless,
crazy racists stop, you know, running down Rodeo Drive.
But this is what the right used to say.
This is the exact same conversation I had with friends who were like retired military, like kind of very conservative right.
Yeah.
Would, you know, the last 8 years with Obama, like, oh, dude, they're coming for our freedom. Like, get ready.
I have never been happier to be a moderate. Like, right. If I had a horse in the race, I'd be devastated right now. Or I'd be overly enthusiastic or whatever.
The thing that I've zeroed in on post the election is what was happening prior to the election, which was most of my friends are liberal. I'm born and raised here, right? If you said a moderate thing, the amount of vitriol that would come at you as if you're one of the Rust Belt Trumpers or a Ku Klux Klan member.
Yeah.
That has got to stop.
100%. That's what this guy was saying.
Yeah.
That's what we played it on the podcast with Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually played the video.
Yeah.
The guy ranting about
with Mike Serrano.
Mike Serrano, yeah. So it's a couple weeks ago if you want to look it up at Dr.com. And I actually played the video and we went over this very fact that this one guy, a British commentator, sort of the John
Stewart. But Jack's in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
Where do you live?
He's the John Oliver.
John Oliver.
Yeah.
You live on the west side of LA, I'm assuming.
I live in Studio City.
Oh, the Valley.
The Valley.
Jesus.
I know.
What's wrong with you?
It's good schools for the kids.
I knew he was going to say that.
Oh, my God.
But what's wrong with that?
Because you can go to private school on the west side.
Oh, you elitist.
Listen, I would love to go on the west side, but like bang for your buck. Like my kids have a yacht, a pool, like
carpenter,
right? I'm in the Colfax area.
No, you're not getting into carpenter. You hear about carpenter? This is only an LA parent thing.
Uh-oh.
Carpenter, people are buying homes to be in the school district. When you go talk to a real estate agency, they'll tell you we're in the Carpenter School District.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Carpenter's close to Ventura Boulevard, where there's a lot of rentals, mm-hmm. so you could buy a home. My friends bought a home across the street from the fucking school, and they couldn't go.
Yep.
Oh, they couldn't go.
You couldn't go.
Why?
Because it's crowded from rental properties, children. Los Angeles,
Our friends that moved into the Carpenter District, they were like, oh, we want to enroll. You know, they called and said, hey, we need to enroll our kids. An hour later, there's a knock on the door. It's the principal. Just to make sure that they lived there. And they came in and they interviewed the parents. They were like,
want to see the child's bedroom.
Yeah.
They want to see the child's bedroom. This happens in Laurel Canyon because of Wonderland School.
Oh, my God.
They want to see the child's bedroom.
It's kind of crazy.
This is what we live in.
Gotta love L.A.
This stuff upsets me. It bothers me.
You move to a certain part of LA so your kids can go to school.
We wonder why everything's
so. Just always private school, and now we're having this trouble.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, let me ask him.
How about I went to Catholic school? My partner went to Catholic school. I want my daughter to go to Catholic school. She's like, no fucking way.
Well, what does she want you to do? Private school?
Yeah, she says the public school is where we live is fine.
Let me ask Jerry. Hold on a second.
I went to Catholic school. Something about Catholic school is good. I'm a moderate atheist conservative. Catholic school is good, Drew.
I'm trying to figure out what the hell you are. I don't know you anymore.
Okay, you're not even.
About the leader of the Catholics is saying fuck Trump?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about education for a second, because I'd be interested in your perspective.
Sure.
Because in Britain they have private school, which is actually public school, mm-hmm. and they deliver great education. I mean, just phenomenal. What's the problem here? What do you see from your perspective? Why can't we do that?
So my perspective is, I think Common Core is the big problem.
We don't demand that they do. We shouldn't do Common Core.
I think it should be left.
But that's only been since Bush too.
No, that was Clinton. He introduced Common Core.
Bush 2 is the one that made the funding tied to it, right?
Bob wants to blame Bush 2.
We'll blame Bush 2.
Well, all I know is this. All I know is this. The kids now graduating have been an entire education of Common Core. So what? 12,
and what does that mean
years?
For kids? People don't have kids.
They
in
have
the
to hit certain core things of what is math, science.
There's standards.
The standards have to be met.
Yeah, it's federalized, standardized education.
Right. In order to get the federal funding.
Yes.
But schools can reject federal funding like Muse in Malibu does.
Yeah.
And if you refuse the federal funding, you cannot do this mediocre education.
Guys,
right?
This was all an attempt, though, to still get things up. We were struggling.
Problem is, I don't think one city in one little area of America, being Washington, D.C., can determine what the education should look like.
What happens in England? Do the local communities? But the local communities determine what the...
Then there's these weird standards. So your secondary school, your grammar school, as they call them.
Yeah, we do too.
They have a lot of... They call them RGS, Royal Grammar Schools. And those are like the best kind of British public
schools.
Like
the Studio City schools.
Yeah, those are like the Carpenter of Wonderland.
But those are technically private, right?
But that's because private is public.
Public is private.
What the hell are you guys talking about?
That's how they just name it differently.
So a private school is state-run. And a public school is private run.
That's just how they call it.
Okay.
Because anyone can go to a public school if they pay, because then it's like, hey, it's open to the public. But private, you have to qualify to go.
Okay.
So you have to pass exams. You have to have good enough results. It's basically a scholarship. You have to be smart enough to attend that level.
Yeah.
And my sense is just the educators, not only are they supported, they're more educated.
I think so, and I think but then again, there's some amazing schools here. I think just on a whole, it's just we're not progressing enough, I think, on the education system. Like the school that I really want my kid to go to, they don't do homework because they realize that the amount of stress that it puts on a child's life is just detrimental. And like, you know, then you got all these issues with like cortisol increasing and like kids just getting stressed out. And their whole thing is like, when you're done with school, go home, spend time with your family, go pursue an after-school activity, play, just explore the world. Don't go back and sit in your room for 3 hours and do algebra and, you know, geometry. It's like, no.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to a school called Park Century on the West Side, which is like a school for learning difficulties, and because I was pretty dyslexic and bad ADHD, and then
you did something good with that,
right? I don't know.
Turned around.
Yeah. What did you do? Because clearly,
you know what's funny? Like I've actually noticed my ADHD has been really bad lately, and I don't know why.
Stress.
Yeah. I cannot focus on stuff. I'm just all over the place, and just like, I've been having a weird thing.
What did they do? Was it a therapeutic school? They used medicine there when you were a kid.
There was a lot of medicine, which I don't agree with. If my kid got diagnosed with the worst ADD on the planet, I'd be like, well,
you gotta slow down.
Yeah, like let him run around.
All right, we'll take a little break. Be right back after this. Well, of course, you've heard me talk about Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right. This is in the Calabria region of Italy. They use it there like crazy. They've used it for generations. It is something that's extremely rich in polyphenols. Now, I don't typically get behind supplements, but this is one I can sign off on. It is known to reduce the risk of heart disease. The Italian government has actually done some very good research on bergamot, as well as many studies to prove its effectiveness. Bergamot Mega Plus, it's a natural statin, right? That's an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. That's much like the medicines that people take, I myself take. Lowers triglycerides, raises HDL, lowers LDL. Some people take Bergamet with the statin even. So it addresses also conditions faced by millions of people worldwide. That is the so-called metabolic syndrome, which is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. And it helps with that. It helps with insulin resistance. Now, I do suggest that you, of course, talk to your doctor if there's any question at all. And there are alternatives pharmaceutically that many doctors may recommend. But Bergamet Mega Plus offers an all-natural option. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many good quality scientific studies. So to learn more, visit Bergamet.com. That's B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. That is Bergamet.com. Or click on the Bergamet banner on our website. I suggest you do so.
And we're back.
We sure are indeed. And, of course, we're here with the great Jack Osborne, the new show. Here, let me get it. Make sure I got it right. It's Jack and Ozzy. Ozzy and Jack's World Detour. He must be just – they must have put you up for a couple more seasons, right?
It's not – well, probably by the time this airs, it would be out. But, yeah, we've picked up for season two, so we're in pre-production
anything
now.
Anything we're looking forward to in that we should be have our eyes out for?
We might be going to Russia, which is kind of cool.
Oh, you haven't done it yet?
No.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm so jealous. This is such a great project.
Yeah, so it'd kind of be cool to go to Russia.
Do you pick the places or
you know how it works with networks. You go like, hey, here's a bunch of ideas. Yeah. And then they go, all right, do that, and that.
Do they have to fund it or is there a budget already ahead of time?
They obviously have to approve it, but yeah, there's an agreed budget.
Are you producing it too?
Yeah. Yes, my production company.
Good for you. Congratulations. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's a big deal.
So it's great because it's got that extra level of security to make sure that nothing weird happens.
So a lot of times when people come on our show, they think we're going to talk about sobriety and we sometimes do. Mm-hmm. You're one of the... Do you mind me talking about it?
Yeah, go right ahead.
You're one of the people I always think to when parents say to me, is a kid really going to get sober at 18 years old? It's like, there's literally only one person
That's true.
How does it feel carrying that torch against the young people of America?
You know, I got about like probably 5 or 6 guys that I got sober with at the same age who were all still sober. So.
Oh, really? You're
kidding? Yeah. I mean,
we'd like to meet them because we don't get to.
I need hope for these parents.
Yeah, it's
because aren't
they
on pills or something?
But the heroin epidemic, like kids are dying on heroin at 15, 16, 17 years old. That wasn't even happening in your day.
No,
it
wasn't.
It's crazy what's happening.
But Jack was at the vanguard of the pill thing.
Yeah, I was spearing the way for, I was the predecessor to the heroin epidemic with kids. I was the Oxycontin epidemic with kids. Yeah.
I was being the big pharma got it going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I always wonder, so a lot of parents turn to you or no?
I get a lot of people reaching out to me, and it's always funny, whenever a celebrity I get a call from a publicist or an agent being like, so and so is trying to get a hold of you, or I'm like, all right, their kid is messed up or someone they know has MS. Like that's either what it is now. And it's never like, hey,
you're a double poster child.
Yeah, I'm like, it's never like, hey, I just want to let you know, I really like the stuff you do. It's like, I have a problem, help me fix it.
And I don't know how much we're going to talk about the MS, but MS now is so highly treatable.
Yeah.
I'm so 100%. Excited for you. Like, it's like, this is the time to get MS.
Yeah, totally. It's so funny. Like, someone came up to my dad. He's like, he's got the Rolls Royce of MS. He's good. My dad was like, what does that mean? I'm like, don't worry about it.
You know who's a big advocate for it is Victoria Williams. She's been diagnosed since mid-80s.
Wow. Yeah.
And she was a part of all the experimental pregnant.
That was when
things.
Copaxone.
Copaxone. She was getting that at Eisenhower Medical Center as an experimental drug.
No, listen, I was there when that was all going on. And that's when we saw it turn.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, oh, my God, we can do something about this now.
Yeah, for sure.
So
prednisone is a what? It sounds the same. How come so many drugs sound the same?
I don't know. That's a question for the good doctor.
I don't know. But the
what's the name of the MS drug?
Copaxone. But they're all made up names anyway. No. They make up the generic name and then they make up the trade name. It's nothing related to the chemistry at all. It's
the
craziest freaking thing of all time. But back to the drug thing. What do you tell kids that come to you?
My biggest thing
is, I have a specific reason for asking that.
My biggest thing is like, listen, you get this now and it's not going to be a problem. Like, if you get this and lock it down, you can actually have the life you want, and it is possible. Like, because the biggest thing, I think if you get sober young and you nip it in the bud right away and you're like, all right, cool, this is what I'm going to do. In my experience, it was like great. This big, giant, horrible, scorpion in a room, is not going to really interfere with me as long as I kind of maintain.
What they don't like, and I deal with these, I got a 20-year-old living in my sober living right now.
But I need to party.
And yeah, I'm only 18, I'm only 19, I'm only 20.
I'm entitled to party.
I don't like the label alcoholic, for life. And I just back off, and you'd be weird about how much more motivated they are if you don't keep insisting that they accept.
I literally went out to nightclubs like every year for like the first like 10 years of my recovery. Like I was just out. I was like out at all the clubs because I learned really early on from going to conventions. Wait a second. You can be social and you can hang out with people. You can still get laid. You can still do all the things you meant to do as a teenager, young adult. And you can do it sober.
It's very important to young people, Drew.
I know.
And we can't forget that.
No, I know.
They think
but they
their
don't
life
believe
is
you.
Over
they
at
don't
18
believe
years
so
old.
So that's something Jack could a message he could deliver. They
I mean, I literally think I had that conversation with Drew at some point.
But
I
was the worst.
We did. But I'm going to tell you, though, that what was different about you that I've not seen since is you just said, what do I need to do? You just asked, tell me what to do, and I will do it. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure you will. And he just did it. And I was stunned. And I've never seen that in a 17-year-old. Yeah. I told your mom. I said I've never seen anything like it. And the other thing is,
well, weren't you the executive functioner? Let's talk about your family dysfunction for a minute.
Wait, but hang
somebody
on. Before
had
you do,
to be her on. Partner in caretaking your dad, and it seemed to be you.
Later on, I mean, early on, it wasn't. I was.
No, that, he was not into that.
Who was helping her?
My sisters were really kind of
really,
yeah, especially Kelly.
Where's your older brother? Was he just gone?
Because they moved. My dad, when they got divorced, they stayed with their mom, and so they weren't real, and they went to boarding school, so they weren't around a lot when we were younger.
Give some thought, though, to why you had that motivation. I mean, if you can send that, give that to somebody.
A couple things. I think for me, the motivation was I saw what my dad had gone through.
Oh.
I'd seen, like, hey, you know what?
How about
like,
what he had put other people through?
That, too. I'd been on the receiving end of it. Now, you can't really contextualize that when you're a kid yourself.
Yeah.
So for me, like I didn't worry about affecting other people because I didn't have anyone to really worry about affecting other than my mom. But my biggest thing was I don't want to struggle, and I want to do all this stuff. Like I had these ideas of like what I wanted to do growing up and what my future. You know, I wanted to experience different things, and I was like, you know what, I'm not going to be able to do this messed up.
So you knew you were derailed in
yes,
some way, yeah,
totally.
And the other thing, I don't know how else to articulate this, is that your entire family, I don't know how else to describe them except you talk about the dysfunction, but the part that doesn't get talked about is
the highest functioning dysfunctional family in America.
I would even go beyond. I would go beyond that. I would go beyond that. Every person in that family is substantial. Like there's a substance to
that's
each
that's what
of
I'm talking
your,
about. High functioning,
but they could also be low functioning.
Yes, there's some low functioning moments.
Yeah,
with all of us.
But it's something about them that's very interesting, and no one else gets to see that unless you're in the room.
Observing the show when it first came on.
What show?
I have a 30-year-old. They're the original Osmonds.
Oh, the original.
I have a 30-year-old. Okay. How old are you?
I'm 31.
Okay, I have a son the same age. I cuss a lot. He cussed. Just that wall being broken down, I felt ashamed. I used to tell him, don't fucking, when you go out. Right? And all of a sudden, here's this family that everybody loves and everybody cusses. It made cussing okay, and I don't know if that's good or bad. You did a great service to me and my son.
We got that a lot, actually. We got that a lot. A lot of people are like, hey, we're
because I used to tell
you...
Elijah, don't cuss in public. You got to know when you can cuss and when you can't cuss.
But I'm sure
and that's a lot of pressure on a 13-year-old kid.
I get it.
I've been sure you've asked me many times. So how was that experience like? Because it was because by the way, you don't know Bob. His folks came into Loveline when they're first like 3 weeks of filming.
Yeah,
with the light, they had those weird lights then, these sort of bar lights, and they were like, oh, we're doing some weird. We don't really understand quite what this is, but man, we're trying it.
Well, Jack doesn't know. I was at this is when you were a kid. I was somewhere. Somebody wants somebody to go talk to your dad for the umpteenth time. They couldn't go. They called me. I went with some of our friends from a very successful band, and we went over to try to help him in that TV room.
Uh-huh.
And he was trying to show us how the remote control works to open up the curtain. That took like an hour and 20 minutes. And I was like, what's going on here? And he goes, I'm doing a television show. You know, and I no one had ever done it before, and I was like, what?
Yeah, we couldn't figure it out,
right?
Yeah, did you have a sense of what it was?
The only thing that we kind of went in knowing that it was going to be always they kept saying was just think of the real world, but you guys. And that's how we kind of modeled it. It was like, hey. It's...
But he told us they can't go in his TV room.
Yeah, that was off limits.
That was off limits. There was no go zones for Ozzy.
And it was kind of funny, too, because he would really make sure, because it was always dimly lit, and those cameras back then were so bad. You needed it to be like, you know, a football field to even see anything, because, like, you know, the iris on him was just crap.
Yeah, so, they bring these huge lights. Yeah. These big couple guys.
They were just all in the entryway, I remember. No, they weren't shooting, but we were going to that TV room. But... just everybody loved you. Just the way he was trying to do it, and then we were trying to help him do it. To just he wanted to show us that his TV was on the wall behind a big red curtain. You've lived with that your whole life, haven't you?
He gets really he's very particular and he likes his stuff and he gets excited. Yeah, he gets excited about his stuff.
Yeah,
but it's the weirdest little things he gets excited about.
You know, but the idea is he's dying. We need to help him, but he wants the curtain to open.
That's just typical addict behavior. It's like, hey, listen, everything's going terrible in my life, but hey, look at this cool flat screen I have.
He opens up the curtain. Opens up. It was pretty badass. I got to tell you, we all drove home like fuck. TV projected on the wall. I think two of the guys went and bought them.
The projectors that were like literally the size of a coffee table.
But it was real TV, not a movie. Yeah. Like TV played.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing.
We've seen those, Bob.
You didn't see it in 1997 or whatever the hell it was. Cool. So but it's been fun.
Your dad ever? He had a lot of trauma growing up, right?
Yeah.
Did he ever dig into that at all, or is he?
I think I obviously through you know various kind of avenues. I definitely think he has.
Because I always thought he'd be a good advocate for that. Because he's spoken about it occasionally in ways that were like, oh man,
yeah.
This you know it sort of demystifies and makes some people feel less. You know, people always feel like it's the only person in the world ever happened to.
Mm.
And the way he talked about it was very like, you know, one of them things, you know, wrong place, wrong time.
I think he goes through phases about like, you know, kind of dealing with it and what have you, just to kind of depending on, you know, where he's, you know, where his recovery is placed in that moment. But, you know, he's it's funny, like, when you become like an adult child and you kind of, you know, you kind of look to your parents, you're like, wow, like this is, you know, now that I have my own kids, I go like, I don't know if I would do the same things, you know. Yeah. Yes, there
but
is.
Don't you think he had it worse than you and we thought we had it bad?
Oh, always.
It's so crazy.
It's always
how it
goes. The case.
What do you mean?
My dad had a horrible life and I always look at him, you know, my sisters always say, look at him, such an asshole. And I, you know, and then I just think of like, his life was so fucking hard to get to where he got to take care of us. And then my life that I complain about and make all excuse about was pretty golden.
Yeah.
It was a little fucked up, though. It was a little fucked up emotion about it, let's be fair.
I'm just talking about comfortability, access to education.
Yeah, you didn't have
those. My dad grew up in the Depression.
Yes, you didn't have those issues.
You know what I mean?
Well,
is it all relevant?
It's all relevant. I mean, like, well, look at the term snowflakes now. You know, you got these, like, college kids who are, like, thinking that the world they live in is terrible, and it's like, actually, you know,
it's awesome.
We live in a time and place where there's the most resources, the most education, the most connection. But
most cool stuff.
Yeah, like, dude, the sheer fact that my 18-month-old gets to hold an iPhone at only 18 months of age. Like,
what about the Dr. Drew when he talks about looking in a book, goes like this, like he's texting Google.
Yeah, well,
it's an amazing world.
We've changed.
And
people need to
not forget that.
Yeah.
I always remember, when I was growing up, I used to think, God, what was it like when the automobile hit? Because the whole world shifted in 15 years. We just lived through that with this thing in our hand.
Yeah, basically,
same thing.
This newfangled technology.
But so do you feel guilty over the Kardashian television show, or do you carry that burden?
You know, it's really
because I blame you.
You know, it's really fun. Like I've known, I've
you grew
known,
up with them.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not really like I met them when I was probably 20, before they started doing their show and. I'm very good friends with Scott Disick. So it's like this bittersweet thing where it's like, I like them. They're all really nice, good people when you know them. But I'm just kind of like, all right, you know, hey, maybe we should move on from this.
You know? Listen, as it pertains to parenting, the snowflake thing you mentioned, mm-hmm. how are you going to do it differently? Because you're the next generation of parents.
So for me, I am a big fan of accepting failure. I think
letting them fail.
Yeah, like yeah. you have to let
resiliency.
Your kid, yeah,
resiliency.
It's like, were you not allowed that?
No, I was totally.
But one of the ways
that parents encourage failure, they're like, yeah, fuck it, don't do it. I'm like, but I hate school. They're like, don't go, Dad. I don't want to do karate anymore. Fuck it.
You failed good.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
Hey,
how
as
I
long as you tried,
Elijah.
On to the next thing.
That's exactly how I raised Elijah.
But my thing, I've always been a big proponent of pushing an education.
Yeah.
And then letting them fail. Don't rescue them from the miseries of that.
Totally.
But push them into situations where they're likely to fail. Yeah. And let them keep going. Yeah. Keep pushing.
But even that, you know, my dealing with Pearl. I mean, she's 4.5, and she. We'll have the craziest tantrums. Like, the world is ending because I won't let her go play with a toy because we have to go leave.
Well, that's normal.
And it's this thing of like, yeah. Hey, you know, whereas most parents be like, oh, well, let's have some candy and I'll da 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 da. I'm like,
talk about
I'm
the
like,
feelings. Let's, talk about the feelings. Yeah. You're having some big feelings yeah. right now. No, get in the fucking car.
Yeah, it's like, we have to go. I'm not dealing with this. You can cry in the car. Like,
you know, our daughter was working at some sort of daycare thing. What did she tell us? They weren't allowed to say no at all to the kids.
Yeah,
yeah. They couldn't tell them no, don't stop or don't run.
Yeah, I see you're having some trouble with this. Or
yeah,
I see you're having
all
some
that
bad
language.
Feelings,
yeah.
As opposed to just get in.
Get in yeah. the fucking car.
You'll be okay.
I have conversations with my other dad friends where I'll just text them and be like, dude, my kids are such fucking assholes. Like, they literally hate me sometimes and want to ruin my life.
Oh, don't worry. That'll continue.
Right?
But
I have Elvis is 6 and we went to Desert Trip, right? He's like, I don't want to go. And I was like, we're going. And he's like, it's for, what did he say? It's for rich old
white men.
What?
Concert.
For my 6-year-old. Yeah.
What the
fuck?
I mean, he's
ever.
Right.
It was the best thing ever.
I was like, what the fuck? But then when he got there,
he liked
loved
it?
Neil Young. You keep on rocking, I mean, in the free world.
That's a great experience for a 6-year-old to have, to see like all 4 of those yeah. bands. Like, yeah.
He didn't get Bob Dylan at all.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh,
most people don't.
So, awesome. But you know, does your daughter say things like that?
She's more like
shocking things that shock you, that are time out of mind things.
One of the funniest things was we were leaving a friend's house, and I was like, "Come on, we gotta go." And she just started going. My wife's named Lisa. She started going.
How'd you guys meet? You and your wife?
We met at a nightclub.
Awesome.
Of course, yeah, right? Hollywood.
Right? So, and we were pre-internet dating too, which was like the
and
best.
You both
look at you
from,
both.
From the
you
area?
Just did the texting thing.
I know, I did the texting thing with my thumb. Yeah.
It's a human thing.
I know. She's from Louisiana.
Oh wow!
And
cool.
she used to do commercial. She was like a commercial actress.
Nice.
We just met out, and you know, I creeped her out, and that was that.
Enough.
That's what your daughter said. I interrupted you. I interrupted the story. Hold up.
So we were at a friend's house, and I was like, "Come on, we gotta go." And I was kind of tired and run out, and my daughter starts going. Fucking Lisa.
Oh,
fucking Lisa. Fucking Lisa. Because I'm like under my breath, like when my wife does something, I'm always like, fucking Lisa. Yeah. And she didn't know what it means.
It comes back to you.
But she and I was like, oh. And I started like, and the biggest thing I know is like, you know, mocking behavior. It's like, I couldn't mock the behavior as it being funny because then she would have kept it going.
Yeah,
so I was
yeah.
just like.
And bring it up later
yeah.
and it would become a thing.
Yeah.
Susan, I see you sort of leaning in here. You wanted to ask Jack something. I get the sense you were.
No.
Good. Oh, you're
well, one thing.
Did you
want to
talk about your thing? He's going to be on.
Oh yes, he will have been on my podcast, Calling Out with Susan Pinsky, because I know that Jack produces a lot of television, and he actually
ghosts.
Had a show about ghost hunting.
I did, yes.
At one point, and I found that interesting, and I was able to get in touch with him, which I've been trying to do for a couple of years.
Oh.
Through Cindy Keza, who actually knows you.
Yeah, Cindy's awesome.
And she's going to be calling in and will be saying hello after her show tonight. So,
cool.
But this will air before this show anyway. So just so you know, if anybody wants to check it out, we're at callingoutwithsusanpinsky.com.
Okay.
And it's also on iTunes and, you know, just Google Susan
What's
Pinsky
that, Nate?
Podcast. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I have an app, and you can also download it on your phone and get it every
What's
week.
What's the app called?
It's called Calling Out with Susan Pinsky.
Shocking.
There
yeah.
you
Good
go.
Time.
Perfect
yeah.
app.
No, and it's been around for a while, and we
forget to promote it.
I mean, everybody on the show knows that I do this, and I try to sneak my clairvoyance in on this show. It doesn't go over very well with this audience, but I do appreciate the fact that people are willing to listen. But I know that I want to know more about you know, Jack's experience with his production, because it's going to be, you know, a really great topic for us.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I want to know from your perspective. Now, my theme has been, I raised Elijah, my older son, mm-hmm. much like you were raised. Mm-hmm. Fuck it. Fuck basketball. Let's go to Amoeba.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Didn't work out so well. You know what I mean? I felt like I was more his friend than I was his dad. So now with my two little ones, I'm being more of a dad.
Yeah.
More like how my dad was, mm-hmm. right? He had an experience, Drew,
listening.
Where his dad was a doctor, wasn't always present, whatever.
This is your dad?
No, your dad.
Oh, my dad. Yeah.
So he's found that the dad that really wasn't the most greatest present dad is the greatest grandfather ever.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Right? What do you feel that way? Is your dad around your kids a lot?
My dad is really...
You get on the ground and play with him?
He will a little bit. His big thing is like, he's just like, he's the guy with the chocolate. So the kids love him. He's just always got like, he comes over, he's got a little baggie of chocolate, and they instantly love him. And it's so that's, you know, that's the good thing. And we spend time together. Like, after here, I'm going to go pick my daughter up and go see him, because he's touring right now, but he's home for a couple days. So,
but do you get what I thought you guys should talk about? When your dad was playing with the triplets and just you saw a different guy, he reported. Mm-hmm. Like, what the heck?
Well, no.
Why was he not that way with me?
Well, no, I didn't think
that. Well, what were you thinking?
I thought that was the best of him, but I got an overlay of a bunch of other anxiety and perfectionism and shit because I was his kid. So I had to get an extension of him, even though he also had this caretaking, warm part about him. My kids only got the good stuff because their outcomes didn't matter to him. You know what I mean?
They should matter to him.
No, not in the way that...
directly.
Yeah, not directly. Yeah. It directly reflect.
He can blame you if they fuck up.
So I had to be beaten to death.
I think it's probably... I think my dad likes the fact that, like, hey, I could get to hang out with a bunch of cool little babies and whatever, and there's no expectation that I have to be here every single day present the whole time and be responsible to raise them.
No responsibility.
And the outcome's on me.
Yeah. He could just dip in, hang out, do his thing, and bounce.
Though for my dad, where it would hang around was anxiety about safety and well-being. As Susan got a giant dose of that.
Oh, yes.
Everything okay?
He was here every day.
Because they could fall? Look at all these stairs around here.
No, we didn't live here, but I'd pick up the phone and he'd go, is everything under control?
And
I remember.
Just anxiety.
It's not under control.
We have triplets, goddamn. It's never under control.
Wow.
Can you imagine three at the same time?
I have friends that have twins right now, and I'm just like, hats off to them. I could never.
I don't know how you had them in the same room. It seems to me it'd be better to have them split up. Because they cry and then I trigger the other one to cry.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't you have just
three? We were in a tight little house. Our house was the size of... We lived in a house for 10 years the size of this whole area. Back when I met Jack, that's where I was living. We had one room. We had
Not
our
10
room.
Years,
we had
only a few years. Only 4 years. Well, 6 years.
6 years with the kids,
But when they were born, we got these mats that they put down at the
gym. I seen the pictures
put gates around them, and then they'd just roll around on the mats all day.
So my friends do. They, like, cage them and, get some food.
We used to have leashes for them
when
we traveled because we didn't want one taking off. So they had these long cords that would, like, stretch.
Traveling with kids.
Yeah,
sucks.
On the airplane, Douglas would take off and he'd go all the way down the aisle and come back up.
Did they not really have a place to live when you were a tiny, tiny kid?
They had a place
mythology.
In London.
There's kind of mythology that you grew up on a tour bus.
I mean, I spent a lot of time on tour bus. I'll tell you what, one thing I'm 100% grateful for my parents is the amount that they traveled us when we were kids.
Isn't it interesting that that's now what you and your dad are doing again?
Totally,
It's fascinating.
Here's a new liberalism thing. A friend of mine's doing the same thing the way you were raised. Mm-hmm. Said, what better education is he going to get than coming around with me? I'm sober. I'm going to take my kid all around the world for 3 years. Oh, the criticism he received in this town?
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, what is that? He's entitled. He should be in school. No, they're going to museums. They have a tutor on the road. Yeah. He's seen the whole world.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not like you were going to grow up a normal kid in Beverly Hills anyways.
Exactly. There's no such thing.
Right.
So are your parents good? Are they all right?
Yeah, they're doing really good.
They're easy people to have affection for. They're both really nice.
Even when your mom's mad, she's cool.
I don't know about that.
Well, maybe not at you, but to me, because she was mad at him, and I saw her at your movie premiere, the documentary thing, she was like, you tell Drew. And then she was like, and then she was so nice. You know what I mean? She was angry. and nice.
My mom is just one of these people that like fixates on little things and then it's like gone. But like for that second, it's like
it was that week, yeah. And I was walking right next to her, right, yeah, in front of the, and she turned around and she said, "You tell Drew, blah 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 blah." And then she said, "Well, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming."
you're like, how is like? Well, that's, you know, good. Just so you know, though, I get the same. I get the same thing.
I figure.
I get the same thing. So it's
we're in good,
know,
company.
It's par for the course with her.
It was a great movie, by the way.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Really, and yours was awesome.
Oh, you saw that?
Yeah.
One? I kept joking. I'm supposed to
we
die.
You know, by the way,
you know what I mean? Because it went on and on forever.
Susan, do we give? We have Bob's documentary up on the website. We should have that. Bob the Monster.
We should give it away. Yeah. I'll get some copies of it.
All right, good.
Do you want to, speaking of you should die thing, not that you, well, we're all going to die eventually.
Yeah.
But when my dad
makes
wrote
it. For a good ending of a documentary. Let's face it, you're a documentarian. When the person dies tragically, it's a pretty good ending.
Well, to that point, when my dad wrote his book and they were trying to turn it into a movie, my mom was going to meetings and like different studios or whatever, and they were like, "Yeah, you know, it's just not a good story because he didn't die in the end." and my mom was like, "You know, he, like, I'm still married," and he's like, "You can't fucking say that." Like, he's just not dead yet, so it doesn't really.
If it was something with a tragic, you know, another small thing that you don't know: the Thelonious Monster guitar player who died, mm-hmm, Bill Stobau, made the Crazy Train video.
No way.
Yes.
The black and white one on
the machine.
Yep.
You talk about the stuff to do your TV show. The machine that was done on to make it look like the train track was on Hollywood Boulevard in Bill Stobau's loft. It was like 60 feet long.
Whoa.
And it was like all this. It was supposedly the newest, you know, like stuff. And it was like prehistoric.
Wow.
And the Thelonious Monster guitar player did the song that broke the second coming of Ozzy.
Nice.
Wow. Very cool.
All right, we're going to wrap this thing up. Yes?
Wow.
Crazy Train.
Jack, thank you.
Really, hey,
it's
thank
such
you.
A pleasure to see
good
you.
Seeing
it's
you.
So great. You seem great.
Yeah.
It's inspiring, young man. And congratulations with all this. The show is Ozzy and Jack. Ozzy and Jack's World Detour. This is on History Channel. We promise you will not be disappointed.
Yes.
Also, be sure to follow us at This Life Podcast on Twitter. Go to Dr.com for all the family of podcasts there. And although we've not gotten too many emails lately, I've got a stack of them I just had in my hand. Please do keep sending the emails. We'll try to respond to them, particularly on the show, as best we can. So.
Didn't respond very good. They were kind of corners. Like, it's hard to.
Well, I've got a bunch more, too. We have had such great guests.
But let's just tell our viewers, if you have a person with a drug and alcohol problem, or whatever.
Any
people
problems.
Listen on the radio. Just call Health and Human Services in any county, in any municipality in America. Tell them your family member's dying of drugs. Find somebody sympathetic on the phone. One thing will lead to the other, and you'll get access to care.
There is care available. It may be difficult.
Most Americans think it's not there.
I know. You may not like it. It may not be pretty. And you may not get to stay as long as you want, but you can find care, but you have to be persistent. You have to really go and get on the wait list and find what county resources there are. It's out there, but you have to go after it. So that's hard for drug addicts.
Yeah.
It's hard for them. So.
Well, it's not hard for their moms. Get on the phone,
but
moms.
Sometimes they won't listen to them. They won't let the mom do it.
They usually don't listen to their moms. That's why they're drug addicts to begin with.
Yes. I feel bad because we get so many emails and we can't answer them. I mean, Drew's not really available to answer them, but we'll try to read some of the pertinent ones. And
you
that
talk
we read,
to the national czar. We need to, next time you talk to the drug czar, tell them,
it'll,
like, we're the people that get all the questions of where they can go. Yeah. We need a national hotline.
It's going to be a different person, the next one, right?
Maybe it'll be you. Do they reach out to you,
or do you reach out to the new drug czars when they, or how does that work?
The last time I reached out to the Botticelli, he was a great guy.
He'll be out with the new administration?
I think that's right. I think that's how it works. He's a great guy, but he won't be gone. I mean, he'll be in the field, believe me. So, but we'll see.
What would you do if Trump called you and said, be the
drug
czar?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Be the drug czar?
Would you do it?
I'd think about it. I would have to say some very unpopular things.
He's not a registered Republican, though.
No, I'm not a Republican. But I mean, if he's just interested in outcomes, we could do it, but it's, you know, I don't know if you know, but it's such a mess right now.
Yeah.
The treatment is a mess. Everyone's getting put on meds and crazy stuff.
It's insane.
It's insane. And I would take heat from some of the other governmental agencies because they've
National Institute of Drug and Alcohol, NIDA.
They've signed off on this, and I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying the enthusiasm for it is no bueno.
Yeah.
So That's a well,
Dr. Drew for drug czar, ladies and gentlemen.
Start it. Start the campaign.
Talk to you guys later, Jack. Thanks.
Hey, thank you guys.
This city of angels and so many devils. Everyone is a prophet. Everyone's an actor. Everyone's so famous. Maybe I'll see Elvis. Maybe I'll see Marilyn Monroe. And I, you've crossed the line. You've made a mess of it all. And now California's dying tonight. Gonna watch it wash away. Gonna watch it wash. Go up in flames. Started in the valley. There is no higher ground. The flood will end in Hollywood. No one to be found. You poison your harvest. You have brought the kill. This is gonna hurt like hell. I promise you it will. You've been so out of focus. And now that you notice, it's just too late. Just too late. California's dying tonight. Watch it wash away. Gonna watch it wash it. California's dying tonight. Gonna watch it go up in flames. Ground.